You're listening to the Old Time Radio Show on 71K News Talk Radio. Now back to Denver's Old Time Radio History buff, John Dunning.
Okay, it's just about 3 minutes until 4. This is KNUS in Denver. And I am very happy today to have Frank Nelson, who we just heard doing a caper, I guess, with Bob Bailey on the Markham matter. I'm yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And according to Milt Josephsberg's book called The Jack Benny Show, we all know this anyway, but Frank Nelson had a frequent but indefinable role on the Benny program. He played a floor walker. Of course, in the Christmas show, which they did every year. He played a waiter in restaurants, in supermarkets. He played a salesman. He played a ticket seller at the railroad station. But on all of these parts, he had one common denominator and one personality trait. No matter what the situation, he was always Jack Benny's arch enemy. And that one magic word that he uttered every week always sent the audience into hysterics. Frank Nelson, are you on the phone?
Yes.
Yes? You're still doing that for McDonald's.
You know, I just, no, I'm not just doing it for McDonald's now. I just finished doing it. I did it up until about the 10th of January. And the way I answered you just with the yes, you know, without stretching it or anything, I have to tell you a story about a director that came on the Benny Show at a particular point in time. And so we were sitting around the table reading, and Jack said, "Oh, Mr. Mister," and I said, "Yes." And we went on through the thing. And when we were through and going to do the rehearsal on mic, he walked up to me and he said, "Frank, don't do that." And I said, "What?" He said, "Don't do that." I said, "Don't do what?" He said, "Well, you know how you said the yes." He said, "Don't do that." I said, "Oh, all right." So, get up there, and Jack said, "Oh, mister, mister." And I said, "Yes." Jack said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, the director told me not to do that." And Jack turned around, and he said, "Have you ever seen my show or heard my show?" And the director said, "Well, no, I haven't." He said, "Well, he's been doing that for 30 years. That's what I pay him to do."
It was probably the most famous one word in certainly that I can think of in all of the old time radio I've heard.
Well, it lasted for 38 years, so I guess it had something.
38 years. Well, you must have started on it very early then.
Well, I started with Jack actually on June 1st, 1934. I wasn't doing the yes then. I was just doing parts with him. And I'd say about 6 months into my association with him, 1 week I happened to stretch it, and the writers the next week said, "Hey, we're going to try that again." I said, "Try what?" They said, "Well, you remember you stretched out a yes and it got a laugh last week?" And I had to think about it, and I said, "Oh, yeah, I remember." So I did, and so then we would, they one day decided they'd see what I could do with "ooh," and so they haven't really cued Jack in. And Jack's line was, you really do hate me, don't you?" And I said, "Ooh, do I?" And he fell right on the floor. Right on the floor. But
this was in rehearsal, right?
Huh?
This was in rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
He could also break up on the air, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, he broke up many times on the air. Many times on the air. You know, it's fun to talk to you in Denver. I don't think you know this, probably, but first broadcast I ever did was at KOA in Denver.
Really?
Yep, I started my career in 1926. I was still a kid in high school. And I did a show for the United States National Bank with a young lady by the name of Georgia Miller. And she was the wife and I was the husband in a series. And I went out to audition for it, and they looked at me and said, "What are you doing out here?" And I said, "Well, they told me you had something to be auditioned for." And they said, "Oh, well, this is a man of about 35 years of age." I said, "Oh, well, okay." And I started to leave, and the director said, "Well, look, have you ever read over a microphone?" I said, "No." And he said, "Well, maybe you'd like to stay and read." And I said, "Well, yeah, sure." So I did, and there were 30 of us that auditioned that day. And the next day they called back 12, next day they called back 4, and I got it. So I worked that, and then I worked at KFEL in Denver. I sold time and announced there. And I opened Denver University's little theater doing Marchbanks in Canada in either 28 or 29. So I have a Many good memories of Denver. My mother had a dress shop, as a matter of fact, at 412 East Colfax, opposite the cathedral there. Well,
you really do know Denver, then?
Oh, yes, I do.
Well, I may have missed it. Maybe you already told me, but how did you happen to be in Denver in the first place?
Well, I went to Maury Junior High there, and I went to West High School there and graduated from West. So I lived there for a long time.
Well, did you mentioned KOA. Don Wilson was on KOA, wasn't he? Did you know him here then?
No, I didn't know Don. I think Don left there a little before I did, and I don't remember Don, and I don't think we met there at all. I met him at KFI out here when I came out here. But I know Don is from there. There was a Freeman Talbot was the director at that time and of KOA, and he informed me I couldn't possibly be an announcer because I didn't have a college degree, and he turned out to be wrong because I did announce many of the top shows out of Hollywood for a number of years.
You mean even back then you had to have a college degree?
Well, he thought that I did.
Today you don't even have to pass the FCC test anymore.
No.
Well, when you say you met Don Wilson at KFI? Was he already doing the Benny Show then?
No, he was not doing the Benny Show at that time. He was an announcer out here at that time. I think he started with Jack's show out here. I don't believe he started in New York. I could be wrong on that. But I think he started out here with Jack. Jack's first show that I did with Jack out here, at that time everything was coming out of either Chicago or New York. And he was coming out here to do a movie, and they wanted to keep him alive in the show that he was doing back there, so they did a five-minute insert out here. And that's when the NBC studios were on the back end of the RKO lot. And John Swallow, who I had worked for at KFAC, KFED here, was the manager of NBC then. And so he called me to do this five-minute spot with Jack. And Jack's on the train coming out, and he meets this fella, and he's telling him about what a great success he's going to be in Hollywood. And I'm very nice to him and noncommittal and polite and finally ends up and he says, I'm Jack Benny, and he said, I expect to star in pictures out there. You're a very personable young man, and I might be able to do something for you. What is your name? And my answer was Clark Gable. And that was the sketch. And then I did another five-minute sketch with him the following week. Then he went back to New York, and he was back there for several months. Then he came out here, and I started working his show after he came out here. And just doing casual characters at first, and then when we developed the character of the floor walker, I mean, I became his nemesis, is what he used to call me.
You never had a name.
No.
You were always...
I mean, if he was going to go to a psychiatrist, he'd call me Dr. Nelson, but I mean, there was never any name outside of my own. If they had to use a name, they'd use my own.
But even that, even the Dr. Nelson, wasn't that really kind of in the later years in the 1950s?
Yeah, in the early days, it had no name. It was just, aren't you the floor walker or a clerk? Or a waiter, or whatever it was, you know. There was no reason for a name.
I think, to me at least, it was, oh my God, there's that guy again.
Yeah,
there's that guy.
Well, that was kind of the way it was received, and it was funny. I'd run into people, and they'd say, what do you do? I said, well, I work in radio. You ever hear the Jack Benny Show? Oh, yeah, I hear it all the time. I said, well, you ever hear a fella? And Jack says, oh, mister, the fella said, yes. They said, oh, that's you. But they would not know me by sight or by name. Because at that time they didn't publicize us very much.
Did you read Irving Fine's book?
Did I read what?
Irving Fine's book on Jack Benny?
No, I didn't read Irving's book. Irving is my pet hate.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
Well, you'll probably hate this anecdote in there. He says you got the most money for one word of anybody in radio or television until that time.
Well, that's a marvelous theory that he has. You see, Irving hated like the devil to turn loose of a buck. It just hurt him terribly. Jack didn't, but Irving did. And Jack didn't know what Irving did sometimes. For instance, I'll give you a story about Irving. One week, I got a call from the casting director, and he said, Frank, I'd like to have you on the show. This is in the television days. I'd like to have you on the show this week, but... you're just voice over. You're at the airport, and you're just coming over the PA, and so Irving thought that maybe you'd work for half of your regular salary. And I said, tell that, and I got just about that far, and he said, never mind, never mind. I'll call you back. So in about 20 minutes, he called back, and he said, okay. He said, see you tomorrow in your regular salary. And he said, now I'm going to tell you what happened. He said, Irving said, I'm not going to pay Nelson's salary to do this thing, so get another actor. So he said, I got another actor. The other actor went on stage, and as soon as Jack said something and this fellow started to talk, Jack said, where's Frank? And Irving says, well, I thought, he says, where's Frank? He said, get Frank. Irving says, yes, sir. So it ended up that he had to pay the other actor, and then he had to pay me my regular salary, so it cost me more than it would have to begin with.
Well, this anecdote he reports in...
It's always that way.
Yeah, he indicates that in the book, because he was the Jack Benny's producer at the time, I believe.
Yes, he was. Originally, he was his accountant, and then he ended up being his producer, finally. And of course, he's now George Burns' manager.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think the anecdote is kind of revealing, because he talks in here about how he didn't want to pay your fee to come in and do this. Basically, what they needed was the yes. You know, he didn't want to pay the fee for that. And so he took it to Benny, at least as he has it in the book. And Benny says, of course we have to pay his fee. He's entitled to get his fee for the one word or whatever else he does. And they, according to Fine, they had a big conference with all the writers to decide whether the one word on this particular show was a big enough laugh to get the fee. And they went ahead and paid the fee because they decided it was.
Well, I'll give you 100-1 right now that isn't the way it happened, because if he wouldn't have dared go to Jack and ask that. He simply wouldn't do that. Jack would expect me to be there if the character was in.
And he certainly expect you to get paid for it.
That's right. And Jack would never have raised the issue about money in the first place. With the kind of money Jack was making, it didn't make any difference. You know, what he was going to pay me, when you figure what he was going to pay the government, it just didn't make that much difference. Matter of fact, I made a lot more money on other shows than I made on the Jack Benny show.
Hmm. The revealing thing, I think, about that anecdote, you know, even that he would tell it, it reveals that Jack Benny's character was the exact opposite of what he went to great lengths to promote on the air.
But Jack was a very generous man, actually. He was a very charitable man. And, for instance, he would give $25,000, let's say, to Jewish war relief during the war, with the stipulation that there be no publicity. There was another comedian out here that would give $5,000 with the stipulation there'd be a lot of publicity. That was the difference between the two.
Hmm.
But Jack was just that kind of a human being. He, when Mel was in that terrible auto accident, he was in a coma for 21 days. Jack sat at his bedside all that time.
This is Mel Blanc.
That's right. And he did the same with Eddie Anderson when Eddie had a stroke. He was out there at the hospital daily. He was a very, very decent and lovely man. He was not an easy man to know, to socialize with or anything like that. Now, Mel socialized with him a fair amount of time, but I never did socialize with Jack, but I certainly enjoyed working with him, and I admired him as a human being.
There are a number of stories about Jack Benny, about his need to, maybe he wasn't easy to know or socialize with, but apparently he was very easy to talk to, at least on a superficial level. I've heard that he would talk to anybody on the street.
I don't really know that one way or another. I mean, certainly he would chat with you in the studio, but you never felt that you were really close to Jack. I never felt I was, really close to him personally. But Jack, we'd chat about kind of inconsequential things. He saw me smoking a pipe one day, and the next week he came in and handed me a new pipe that he'd gone out and bought just because he saw me smoking it. So he was a very nice person, but when I say not easy to talk to, he was not easy to make conversation with, I guess is what I'm saying. At least not for me. But certainly he was another thing that that Jack would do. If there was an extra character on the show, for instance, they would get somebody, get a good actor, and the actor would be telling everybody, "Boy, I'm on the Jack Benny show this week. Be sure and catch it," because everybody was thrilled to work that show because it was number one for like 15, 18 years. So if that actor did not read exactly as Jack expected to hear it, not in any vicious way at all, but he would say to the director, no, get somebody else. Now, they would pay that actor because he had to be paid. He'd been called. And Jack didn't object to that at all, but he just got somebody else. Now, very often, you see, Hilliard Marks, who was Murray's brother, was director part of the time. And there were other people, until Freddie DeCorda came along, that just kind of sat in the seat and called themselves directors, but Jack fundamentally was the director. And they just wouldn't argue with Jack. They wouldn't say, well, wait a minute, let me have the actor do it a different way. And so it happened that at one time, when we were doing a radio show, I mean a television show that we had done in radio, I walked in, I said, oh, I'm doing the lawyer. And the writer said, shh, don't say that. I said, what do you mean? They said, you're not doing the writer. We don't want Jack to know this is an old radio show. And I said, oh, come on. You think Jack won't recognize this show? Won't know what it is? And no, he won't. And I said, well, okay, fine. Well, the lawyer was a what you call a non sequitur. You would say one thing. The lawyer would say something entirely unrelated to that. It might sound a little like that, but it was unrelated to what you said. So it was the kind of a part you had to learn completely by rote. You had nothing to hang on to. So they replaced the actor about four times. And finally, I got a call from Freddie DeCordova about two nights before showtime, and he said, Frank, Jack wants you to do the part of the lawyer. And I said, well, I'm not going to do the part of the lawyer. He said, I don't think you heard me. I said, Jack wants you to do the part of the lawyer. I said, I don't care what Jack wants me to do. At this late time, I have no intention of learning that part. And you have now gone through about four actors, all of whom are quite capable, and if somebody will tell this particular actor what they want, he is quite capable of doing it, and he will do it. He said, well, I'll call you back. So about an hour passed, and he called back, and he said, Frank, we're going to go with the actor that we have, but he said, I didn't give Jack your message. I said, well, that's very kind of you, and I know why you didn't, and it was probably not a smart thing for me to say, but I just felt that way about it. Well, they did go with the actor, and it turned out that he did a superb job, and when it was over, Jack went over and put his arms around him, told him how great he was, and then used him in about six successive shows after that. Now, the man would never have worked again if I hadn't just said, no, I'm not going to do it. So it was that kind of thing that was difficult for other actors when they came on the show. It was, unless they really came up with exactly what he expected to hear, then they never worked the show again.
Well, it sounds like, Jack Benny has I think this is accurate, has a reputation as being not a particularly good comedy writer. It sounds like he was performing the function of a writer, at least in that kind of situation.
Jack had a great deal to do with the writing. The writers would maybe fight over a line for a long time, and nine times out of ten it would be Jack who said what was in and what was out. So he did have an extremely good comedy sense. And of course, if you stop and think about Jack, he was so different than any other comedian that you could name, because Jack did not do jokes. There were no jokes in Jack's dialogue. If you read Jack's dialogue, you'd say, what's funny about this? Well, what was funny was it had to do with his character of being cheap, or it was like, you know, when Mel said, your money or your life, and he said, I'm thinking. Well, that went to the cheapness of his character, and it was a huge laugh. But Jack's dialogue as such was not funny. Never was. He gave all the jokes to his second bananas. We had them. And it takes a great deal of confidence in yourself to be able to do that. There are very few comics that have that much confidence in their way of putting a show together that they will turn all the jokes over to other people. And Jack did that, if you think about it.
Yeah, you know, one of the funniest things that he did, I think, it's recounted a little bit in Milt Josephsburg's book. Speaking of Josephsburg, I wanted to ask you, how did you get along with the writers?
Oh, fine. They all liked to do me. They all hoped something had happened to me so they could all... Every time I walked in, they were all doing the yes. And I got along very well with them.
Well, in Josephsburg, he talks about... one of the things I loved about the Benny Show was how if they blew a line, they would play on it and build on it throughout the...
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering if some of that wasn't... If some of those lines maybe weren't blown in dress rehearsal and built into the show, or...
Oh. No.
They were actually blown on the air.
That's right. For instance, Mary had one where she came in and I was the soda jerk and she said, I'll have a chisweez sandwich. And that played for weeks. And that happened on the show. It did not happen in rehearsal.
Those running gags were just fantastic.
That's right. Another one was when Harris had Manischewitz, you know. I mean, he just garbled it, and they did Manischewitz for a long time. I'll tell you the most famous one, probably. I don't know whether it's in his book or not, but it probably is. Don Wilson had a line early in the show. Oh, first, I have to back up to myself. I had a line, and Jack says, oh, Mr. Mister. I say, yes. He said, are you the doorman? I said, well, who do you think I am in this uniform? Nelson Eddy?
That's the one. I'll just let you tell that. I was going to read it, but I'll let you tell it.
Okay, so he said, Nelson Eddy, and he said, you know, I don't like that joke for Frank. We got to get a different joke. He said, I don't like the Nelson Eddy joke. Well, we get the show, and they haven't changed the joke. Now, early in the show, Don Wilson had a line about Drew Pearson, the famous columnist, and it came out Greer Pearson. Well, that got a tremendous laugh out of the audience and broke Jack up. Now I look up at the booth, and the writers are motioning to me to come into the booth. So I get up and go back and walk in the booth. I said, what do you want? They said, look, when you get to the line, says, are you the doorman? Say, well, who do you think I am in this uniform, Greer Pearson? I said, come on, fellas, it doesn't even track. They said, never mind whether it tracks, do it. I said, now look, nobody ad-libs with Jack, and you know that. They said, we will take the responsibility for having given you the line. I think if it had died out there, they'd have all said, he did it on his own. I don't know. But anyway, I went back out, and now we get to the thing, and Jack said, oh, Mr., Mr., and I always had my back to him, and I whirled into the mic, and I said, yes. And he said, excuse me, are you the doorman? And as he said it, I saw this dull look come into his eyes like, oh, good Lord, here comes that line I don't want to hear. And I stared right into his eyes and I said, well, who do you think I am in this uniform, Greer Pearson? Well, his eyes got like two saucers. He began to laugh. He grabbed a hold of the microphone. He slid down the microphone to the floor, pounded on the floor, got up, staggered clear across the stage to the far wall, turned around into the curtains, got a hold of the curtains, slid down the curtains, pounded on the floor some more, got up and staggered back to the mic, and the laugh is going on through this whole thing.
This is all live.
That's it, all live. And it went on through a whole thing. Now he gets back to the microphone. I thought he'd never, you know, get back to the script. And I really think that this is probably the longest laugh we ever had on the Benny Show.
Longer than your money or your life?
Yeah, I think it was longer than that. I think it was, but it wasn't planned, you see. It just happened. And so then for weeks after that, I would run into writers from other shows, and they'd say, that whole thing was a planned routine, wasn't it? I said, no, it was not. And I'd tell them this story very much as I've told you, and they all thought I was lying to them. There wasn't a one of them was convinced that I was telling them the truth, and it's absolutely the way it happened.
There was a wonderful one that Mary blew. In fact, I even said on the air, you know, I really think that must have been done in rehearsal, and apparently I'm wrong, but there was a wonderful line that she blew where she was supposed to say, he says, where's my car? And she says, it's up on the grease rack. And she says, it's up there on the grass reek. And they used that for about 3 or 4 weeks running. I think there was a line in there about a couple of skunks getting out, and they're over there, boy, that grass reeks or something like that. The writers were ingenious at turning.
Oh yeah, once anything like that happened, they would pick it up. No, Mary, you couldn't write that kind of a breakup for Mary because she wouldn't be able to do it. She just wouldn't be able to handle that kind of a thing and make it sound like anything but a phony thing. No, there was never a single one of those things that was written into the script.
Hmm. I mean, hmm. when you came on for a show, you pretty much had to work, what, 4 or 5 days on it, right?
Oh, no. Now, are you talking radio now?
I'm talking rehearsals and everything.
Well, radio, we would come in on a Thursday, read through once. Then we'd come back on Saturday. No, wait a minute. I'm talking now TV. We'd read on Thursday. Then we would rehearse. Yeah, if you had a TV show, you might run 4 days. But if you had a radio show, you'd come in on Saturday, read through the script, and come back on Sunday, read through sitting down, get up and read once around the mic, and that was it. Then you'd do the show. That's all we ever did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was no long rehearsal in the radio days at all. In the first place, practically everybody on the show you see knew each other and worked with each other all the time, and it was just a case of if they thought they had to do some work on the script, they'd do that, but outside of that, it was just a read-through and go.
And it was all built on personalities that had been established years before.
Well, sure. You take, you heard the fellow come in and say, "Hello, stranger." Well, that was Sam Hearn. Sam would be on occasionally, but everybody knew the character. Artie Arbach, pickle in the middle with the mustard on top. Andy Devine, "Hiya, Buck." Sheldon Leonard and Benny Rubin, each doing the tout. Benny Rubin did it first, and then when Benny was out of town once, Sheldon Leonard came on, did it, and he liked Sheldon better, and so Sheldon did it. But those were the people that were around him all the time, with Mary, of course, and then Phil Harris, and the singer, Dennis Day, or whoever the singer was at the moment, you know. Those that was his whole cast.
You also did it on TV.
Yep. I didn't. You see, none of us of the regulars worked near as much in TV as we did in radio. In radio, I was under contract to him, and we'd do 39 shows in the season, and I'd usually do anywhere from 26 to 30 out of the 39. Then when we went to television, you'd do about 22 shows in the season, and I would maybe do 6 or 7. That was about all.
How did you personally cope or take to the transition to television?
Well, it didn't bother me. I had come out of theater originally. That's where I started. And so from theater, I went into radio. And so really, I was going back into theater to a certain extent. It did disturb some people. There were some people that didn't make the transition well at all and really kind of dropped out after the radio days. Of course, there was one tremendous thing about radio versus television, and that is you could do anything that you could do vocally. So I could be a leading man, I could be an old man, a young man, a Frenchman, a Scotsman, a heavy. I could do all those things in radio. But once you got on television and you had the kind of a character I did with Jack, you were not going to do anything else. You were going to do an offshoot of that character. Because everybody was going to call you for that. Nobody's going to call you to do a heavy in a picture or in a television show. You know, they're just not.
Right.
So you were put into a much more narrow confine than you were in radio. Radio I enjoy far more than I do television.
Listen, I've got to take a break. Can you hang on and talk for a little bit longer?
Sure.